We have some of our people come over from the control center a little earlier, and we have Rocco Petrone, who is the director of launch operations for the Kennedy Space Center. Rocco is also the launch director of the Apollo missions and the preparations and the countdown here at KSC. Now, for planning purposes, I think the best thing to do is the pass over Guaymas is going to be about 2:20. 2:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We suggest that we cut off the conference at that time, and certainly no later than that. We'd like Rocco to bring you up to date on the countdown operations and the mission as it stands at this time in orbit. We'll then take 10 minutes of questions from here at the press site, 5 minutes of questions from Houston, and then I think for everybody's benefit, I think it would be best to get back to the mission at there'll be maybe some angry or sad faces, but I hope you understand. We'll take 10 minutes here, 5 minutes in Houston. And we'd like you to wait for the mics when the questions come up. I'd now like to introduce Rocco Petrone, the launch director for Apollo 10.
Well, I'd like to summarize by saying we got off on time, which I guess you all know, and essentially had a smooth count. We did pick up the count, our terminal phase at 249 this morning. We had a few small difficulties to resolve during the count. However, we had purposely put in a one-hour built-in hold at T-minus 330 in the count. Turned out the way things moved, we actually were about 30 minutes ahead of our preparation. At one time, Tom Stafford did kindly remind us that maybe on the next one we'd have the crew up to 20 minutes less. The problems we looked at, I guess I'd say the significant problems, one, we did have some concern of loss of pressure in the ground conditioning. This conditions the inner stage of the instrument unit and the S4B, the upper dome, which is where your liquid hydrogen is. We did see a loss in pressure right after picking up the terminal count. We did analyze that. From all we could see and assess, we were a bit concerned by the temperature. In other words, would it hold properly? And we assessed that it would, and I must say that it did. The temperature up there did function exactly like we saw it in countdown demonstration. And this unit, I must add, is only used to lift off. And our concern then had to be, would we have the right temperatures in the instrument unit where all our electronics are at liftoff? And we did. There were one or two minor problems in the facility. When we brought up our liquid oxygen pump, we did find a fuse blown. We had to go out. We did have to readjust a helium regulator out on the launcher umbilical tower. Again, this came up right shortly after picking up the count. I would say after that, things did go very smoothly. The planned liftoff time was the time as set, 12:49. The S4B cutoff was actually 11:47, or 4 seconds more than planned, and insertion into orbit then would be 11:57. The parameters we achieved, and this now is early data, was 103.6 nautical miles by 101.1 nautical miles. I guess you all heard the transmission from the crew during the boost phase, and they seem to be both impressed and enjoying it immensely. There was one anomaly detected, I believe the only one to date, and that was the primary water boiler system dried out. And let me add, this is not part of the system we discussed at the press conference yesterday, which is a water separator system that takes water out or moisture out of the O2 loop. Keep the cabin at the right humidity. This is a boiler for cooling. It is one of two the crew was requested to shift to the secondary. The secondary did come up properly. As I left the launch control center, the reports were coming in from Carnarvon, Australia. The second water boiler had come online properly. The first water boiler, they were getting ready to reservice. And this would be done on the pass over the states here. I must add, we have seen boilers dry out on previous launches. It's not an uncommon thing. And we have been able to bring them back up through a servicing procedure. I'm sure many of you have followed the previous launches of Apollo will recall a number of water boiler dryouts. So we are going to attempt to reservice the primary. The secondary is now working. Now let me also add that for TLI, our mission rules, our flight rules, do not call for either of the boilers to be up. Of course, we'd like them up. We have a radiator system aboard for primary cooling. The radiators in themselves are redundant. On Apollo 8, we learned that the heating load can be handled by the radiator loop itself, and there we have redundancy with two loops. The water boiler primarily serves the purpose of helping the radiator when a peak load comes in for a short transient. The water boiler is not functioning all the time. So then it sits there sort of on idle, ready to assist the radiator loop if there's a peak load. We feel from Apollo 8, and these rules were derived before this mission, that we understand the heating loads to the moon and in the vicinity of the moon, and therefore the rules do not require both boilers to be functioning for a go decision of TLI. I must add that's that element alone. As you all know, there are many, many other things being looked at now and will be looked at before the decision for TLI, translunar injection, can be made.
Exactly. Thanks, Rod. Could I take
that 1 minute? We're just before we go into the questions there, were some questions about the exact launch time. We had it at, I believe, 0.7 off the planned launch time. We've refined that a little bit. It's 569 milliseconds off the planned launch time of 12:49 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
I'd like to add to that. We've had 5 Saturns, and I've referred to the time of takeoff as the way we set our clock. There always is a question of a few milliseconds, but when I see one of these large ones take off, I'm willing to accept that at 12:49.
Okay, I guess we're ready to go into questions now. There's going to be many press conferences before this mission is over. I'd like to suggest that we confine the questions, if possible, to what has transpired thus far. Mr. Witkin?
Boilers working for TLI?
Dick, we do not. The mission rule, actually, we can go without either boiler because the radiators, which are redundant unto themselves, do take the prime load. The boiler is just an assist. Of course, we'd like to have it up, and we're going to attempt to resurface on this next pass over the states.
Reg?
Was there any repetition of the vibration that you got on 8 and 9 with the center engine?
I did not hear in the conversation from the crew any comment on the vibration. Tom did say, Tom Stafford, I believe, as the S1C was getting ready to go through Max-Q, I believe he said something like, things are starting to shake in here. What he's referring to, I'm presuming, is the normal buffeting. That is not the thing we have seen. There was some other conversation later down the line, but I do not recall myself hearing any reference to the thing we have referred to as POGO, or the vertical oscillation.
Please wait for the mic as we go along so we can record all your questions. Go ahead, Harry.
Harry Pease, Milwaukee Journal. I wonder if Rocco could say a word about the RCS pre-valve opening, what occurred there and how was it cured?
Okay. In the checks that were going on, this came up somewhere about 10 o'clock last night, and we did discuss it amongst the many parties involved, both here and at Houston the designers at Downey, California. What had happened in servicing, there is a thing called a diaphragm that prevents the fuel from going down to the valves. Now we have two systems, A and B, in the reaction control system for the command module. On the oxidizer side of system B, the diaphragm, you might say, gave way, letting the fluid go down to the main valve. Now, in flight, it's going to do exactly this. As you pressurize your tanks, now this would happen on reentry, the fluid would go down to the main valve. In looking at the status, it was decided that there's also an isolation valve, which we have in there. These are two valves in series. There's a main valve and an isolation valve. We could use the isolation valve as the diaphragm, in a sense. Therefore, it was decided, mainly so there would be no pressure buildup while in space, to close the isolation, they would normally be closed, vent out by opening that valve. Now, this would not burn at this time, it would vent. And I believe the S was about 3.6 pounds of oxidizer. In order to vent it out of that line, close it, then in effect we have the two valves closed, both of which we have the leak test characteristics of, and in a sense the isolation valve then is doing the function of the diaphragm, which had broken, letting oxidizer get down to the main valve of the reaction control system, again on system B, one of the two redundant systems.
Go ahead, Harry. Now, I think he has a follow-up there.
In the Gemini 8, when you popped the pre-valves on the RCS system, you considered that reason for ending the mission. How does this differ?
That wasn't the... I'm not sure. Maybe it wasn't.
I really cannot compare this hardware with the Gemini. I'm not that familiar with it. With the Gemini spacecraft. I do know roughly what you're referring to. I recall the mission, but the exact hardware here, by having the isolation valve we can close, and by having the main valve, in effect, we have a system there. See, it's not pressurized at this time. We have another valve upstream keeping high pressure off of the fuel system until we re-enter. At that time, we say we blow a squib valve, that lets pressure come in, then that puts that system under high pressure. Right now the system is under something like 25 to 30 pounds. So it's very low pressure in there, and with two valves, we don't see, have any concern of it leaking.
Go ahead, Dick.
How do you service this boiler when it comes over the States next time?
Dick, the crew, when a boiler dries out, there is a checklist procedure. We go through this in the altitude chamber when we make our runs here with the crew. The various steps essentially are to let water in, let it in a certain rate, and then you want to get boiling. The boiler is exposed to the vacuum of space. And if you achieve a water flow through there at a certain rate, you then get boiling on one side. As you let water come in the other, as the water boils up in space, it cools the boiler, and we then take water glycol through there to be cooled as it goes through these plates. The procedure, I say, has been used many times in space. Some of you may recall on Apollo 8, I recall once as the crew, as it was coming around the moon, they reported that the water boiler had dried out and they serviced it. I know on reentry, I believe there was a dry out of one of the boilers, and Bill Anders, in effect, did some servicing as the command module was on its reentry path before, of course, it entered the atmosphere. It's a fairly well-known procedure, and they'll be going through this very shortly. When I say well-known, and we've used it many times.
We appear to have a three-man conference going here. Go ahead, Reggie.
sorry, but I have an uneasy feeling you're trying to tell us that translunar injection is looking a bit doubtful. Could you estimate the chance?
I don't believe I've said that. And I've not mean to leave that impression. At the same time, we haven't said yes. We allow ourselves, as you know, an orbit and a half onto the second orbit. I've said, at this time, our mission rules do not call for both boilers to be online for the reasons I explained at quite some length. I've not said we're looking doubtful.
Okay,
I do want to say we've got more to look at across the spectrum.
All right, we'll take three more questions from here, the hands I see right now. Mary, go ahead. These two right here, and then we'll switch to Houston.
Mary Bubb, Fairchild Publications. Rocco, why do these things go dry? Is this sort of a characteristic of the beast?
Mary, I cannot answer that thoroughly because I'm saying in looking at it, if we knew, we would take steps to put a fix in. When you say characteristic, I personally have to say yes, we do see this happen. We've seen it happen in our altitude chamber runs, but exactly why it was like this servicing situation we had yesterday with this wick and wetting of it, there are sometimes conditions that force you to repeat it, but we don't know exactly why.
In here.
Mr. Petrone, can you run through the figures for ignition and cutoff times for the various stages and the staging sequences?
Okay. Again, we took off at 1249, and I'll take the milliseconds to myself and say 00. S1C, center engine cutoff, was at 2 minutes, 14.7 seconds. The outboard engine cutoff on the S1C was 2 minutes, 41.1 seconds. S1C, S2 separation was 241.8. I think all of you will recall that Tom said that's quite a sight. And each one of the crew, when they've returned in the debriefing, have spoken of that sequence of staging. It must be quite a jolt and quite a sight. S2 ignition was 242.5. We jettisoned, the second plane separation was at 3 minutes, 11.5 seconds. Center engine cutoff on the second stage was 7 minutes, 40.1 seconds. S2 outboard engine cutoff was 9 minutes, 12 seconds. S2 S4B separation was 9 minutes, 12 second, 0.9. S4B ignition, 9 minute, 13 seconds. Then S4B cutoff, it was 1147. I believe that was the number I had.
Okay, Tom, we'll take the last question here, and then we'll switch to Houston.
Colonel Petrone, that big cloud that was in front of that's kind of obscured the rocket as it was going up the tower. Is that because the flame pads on this launch pad are different, or shaped differently, or point different?
No, they're pointed the same. The flame trench is north-south on both pads. However, pad B is somewhat west. So from this press site, your angle of looking at the plane would be a little different. But the trenches, the flame trench, is exactly the same on pad A, pad B, same orientation.
8,700 feet between the two pads. Okay, we're now ready to switch to Houston for about 5 minutes of questions there, please.
This is Houston. Jack, let me take a few seconds. This is Houston to... see if the conference there has generated any questions among the newsmen who are here in the auditorium. Hold one. Evidently, hold one.
This is directed to Mr. Petrone. Rocco, when will we know, and you know, whether the boiler situation is such that TLI can be made.
Point out again that it's not.
I'd like to point out again that that status of that boiler, according to our pre-planned mission rules, the primary boiler does not have to be in a functioning condition to make TLI. We are going to attempt to service it. As I left the control center about 30 minutes ago, we were going to attempt that as we made this pass over the states, attempt to resurface to the primary boiler. The secondary boiler was functioning properly.
Will the first part of that question be answered again? We didn't get the transmission here in Houston.
The decision for translunar injection does not depend upon the primary boiler being resurfaced. I gave the reasons at the first part of the conference here that the main part of the cooling load, that's the purpose of this boiler and radiator, the main part will be taken by two radiators for the planned mission. The boiler, in effect, sits there to help when you reach a peak condition. During the Apollo 8 mission, for the planned profile, it was seen that essentially the boilers could handle, the radiators could handle the load by themselves that we could expect. So therefore, the boilers do not become mandatory for the translunar injection decision.
The center engine of the second stage was cut off about 2 minutes early. Was this an attempt to prevent POGO?
It was cut off early with the times I gave earlier because there were oscillations observed both on Apollo 8 and Apollo 9. And as we continued to study, and this is still under active study, we just felt it was prudent to cut the engine off before we get into the time frame of the engine going, giving us these oscillations. The oscillations appear to depend upon the height of the liquid in the stage. So at a certain time when you know your height, we cut that engine off. We compensated for it by burning longer. This was all planned, and the S2 did perform according to plan.
This is Houston. That's all the questions that have been generated here. We'll return it back to you, Cape.
Okay, thank you very much. I do have several announcements here. The latest number we have on the first television pass would be at starting at 3:49 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, if all goes well. Second matter of interest to the press here particularly, Barbara Cernan was here to observe the launch, and if the mission continues in this manner, she would be happy to meet the press, anybody who desires to interview her. She will be available at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at the Quality Courts Motel in Cocoa Beach. I think there's two pools there. I'll have to find out which one it is. Just a minute. We have a little statement here. Mrs. Barbara Cernan, wife of Apollo 10 Lunar Module pilot Eugene Cernan, will meet the press at 5 p.m. today at poolside behind the Quality Courts Gemini Room in Cocoa Beach. All media representatives who wish to cover Mrs. Cernan's conference may either drive their own vehicles to the motel or ride one of the NASA buses departing the press site for Cocoa Beach following the post-launch press conference. I guess one final thing. We had planned another conference here for after TLI and after the television pass. We will not have Mr. George Lowe, who we thought was going to participate. He wants to fly back directly to Houston. The participants would be Dr. Von Braun, Dr. Debus, Mr. Lee James from the Marshall Space Flight Center, and in all probability, Rocco again. Are you people interested in a conference such as that? It would be obviously quite launch-oriented. Somebody say something. Okay, we'll have it. Thank you very much. We'll see you after TLI. Yes, it will be out here. I can't give... the time will be after the TV pass, so let me see. I guess we'll hack it in and let's... what did I say? 3:49? Probably in the area of 4:30, I would expect. 4:15 to 4:30. I think everybody is going to be tied up in one variation or another on TLI, and then the television pass. So why don't we take a hack at 4:30 as a time? Thank you.
This is Apollo Control at 1 hour 40 minutes. Apollo 10 has just passed over the east coast of the United States. We're still in contact at Grand Bahama. The crew has extended the docking probe. John Young reported he could hear it go out. And Charlie Duke has passed up the TLI information and also some pads for several abort times right after TLI. We have the tape of this pass over the United States starting at Guaymas. We'll play that for you now.
Hello, Apollo 10, Houston, through Guaymas, standing by.
Roger, Houston, with you loud and clear.
Roger, you're five by.
Okay, we're ready to extend the docking probe when you are.
Roger, stand by.
We got to get a go on that temperature measurement.
10, Houston, we're ready for you to extend the docking probe, and you'll have to stand by on the temp till we get high bit rate.
Roger. 10, 1, we'll count down to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, extend.
Roger, copy.
5 to 4, wind grade.
Roger.
We can feel the clock.
Roger.
Yeah, you could hear it go out. I believe it's all the way out.
Roger, say you heard it go out?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, we'll have a P-27 for you over Bermuda at about 1 plus 4-0, and we got a TLI plus 90 pad if you're ready to copy, Gene.
Stand by. Roger, TLI plus 90. Go ahead, John.
Roger, TLI plus 90, SPS / GNN, 63556. Minus 148 plus 135 003 55 4487 minus 05484 minus 4 balls 1 plus 66232 180 239 001 Apogee is NA. Perigee is plus 00175. 66458. Burn time 737. 66199. 242087. 167.
Hello, Houston, it's 10.
Go ahead.
Houston, we lost SBN for a second there. I got everything through HANA. Go after that.
Okay, Gene, HP is plus 00175 66458 737 Delta VC 66199. 242087167. Foresight Star is Shawla, and it's left 008 down 27 minus 2605 minus 02500 11229er 339933 0125535. Okay, your set stars are Dunham and Vega at 067-283-337, no ullage. And your P-37 for TLI plus 4 is 00630-6373. The longitude is minus 165. GET 400K 02221. Ready for your readback.
Okay, Charlie, here it comes. SPS GNN 63556 minus 148 plus 135 003 554487.